Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is Wednesday, January 27th, 2016. It's been a minute since we had an episode, and there's a very good reason for that. We've been very busy doing political things.
Yes, we have.
And Rachel's going to tell you all about that. As usual, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And is Dana joining us, or is he just kind of around?
Not for this first one, no.
Okay, well, if he wants to jump in, he can just sort of grab the mic and
absolutely
do his thing.
Yeah.
So, we're here, of course, in Denver, Colorado, as you may know. And we were on the news yesterday and in some outlets because we did a thing. Rachel, why don't you remind the good folks, if they hadn't heard about this before, what we have been up to and what we did yesterday.
Right. So, if you guys don't know, there was a terrorist attack, as I like to call it, and I think everyone else should too, on a Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs on November 27th, by this guy, Robert Deere, who had heard some things and had some feelings about women and abortion, and decided to attack a Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs. Three people were killed. One was a police officer, one was a veteran, one was a mother. And after that shooting, a local Colorado state representative by the name of Joanne Windholtz came out publicly and blamed Planned Parenthood for the attacks. She said that violence begets violence, and any violence that happens within Planned Parenthood walls is the fault of Planned Parenthood itself. Basically, you know, we're baby killers, and so people are allowed to murder people at Planned Parenthood because she is against abortion.
Basically, it's our fault, is what she said.
Me and
Rachel specifically. Well, she didn't mention us by name. But
exactly.
Right.
So we took offense to that, as did some other people that we know.
And lots of people.
We didn't know. And a bunch of other people, 63,000 to be specific, to her comments. And so we started what was initially a recall campaign against Representative Windholtz to recall her from office. That has been a complicated process, dealing with the Secretary of State's office and a host of other things.
And it wound up not being feasible in terms of getting the seat back to a Democrat.
Correct.
And not because the problem here with the other side of the aisle, and especially in terms of local and state politics, they tend to be very, very extreme. It's as bad as like Texas, if not worse. So if we were actually
state, so we're really purple, but the extremes are pretty extreme, particularly on the right, and in particular in Colorado Springs. It's the evangelical capital of the country, essentially.
Yes.
And so people...
And that's not her district, by the way. We should make that clear. That's actually here close to Denver, actually just a tad northeast of downtown Denver in Adams County, District 30.
Yes. Covers Aurora and Thornton and a bunch of other suburbs of Denver. And so, yeah, she said those things, and we and a bunch of other people were very upset by that. Tried to recall her. The recall process in Colorado is very complicated. I don't know how many states have a recall process. Ours seems to be particularly effective. But what we didn't know were some things that we found out. This was a grassroots movement. This is not something that, you know, we're not being backed by any kind of money or any kind of anything like that.
Nope, just individual donations, all of it. We have no corporate or NGO or any sort of sponsorship of any kind outside of individual regular people just like us.
Right. And we also don't have any sort of infrastructure or support network or anything else.
We have your living room.
We have my living room, right. And our computers and our minds. But we really didn't have any kind of like official capacity within which we were working. We really just decided that this was a step too far.
Yes.
That in light of what had happened and what she said, that we really didn't think that someone like her should be representing anyone in our state. So we launched a recall campaign. We raised about $5,500 from individual donors on GoFundMe.
Yeah, averaging about $5 or $10 a piece, showing you how many people were on board with this.
And an organization called CARE2, which is CARE and the number 2, also, independently of us, launched a petition asking for her resignation. And so in the days and weeks after we were, you know, trying to get this started and Googling around, we found them. Dana specifically found CARE2 and reached out to them. And we hooked up with them. They are the people that gathered the nearly 63,000 signatures asking for Joanne Wynn-Holtz's resignation.
Mm-hmm.
And so after filing campaign committee paperwork with the Secretary of State and having that been denied for a host of jurisdictional and HR reasons, I guess. It's kind of complicated, but we've resubmitted that. And then also learning about the recall laws in Colorado and finding out that Joanne Wynn-Holtz is on the on the ballot in November.
Right.
We actually logistically can't recall her at this point. You can't recall someone who's on the ballot within 6 months is a Colorado law. Once you decide to recall someone, you have to submit paperwork to the Secretary of State. They have to approve it. Then you have to go through a petition filing period. They have to approve that. Then they have to release language. And then after that, you have 60 days, and it can't be within 6 months. So technically, like, by the letter of the law in Colorado, it's not possible for us to recall her.
Yeah, I mean, so to answer this question more succinctly, because we're still getting – because originally this did start as a recall campaign.
It did, absolutely.
And we were – you know, that was our intent. And going through the proper process of doing that, it basically became just not feasible to do that. And even if we were able to do that, mm-hmm. let's say in theory we were able to recall her, then basically the Republicans could then just appoint somebody to take over her seat.
Yes.
So basically, to make a long story short, even if we somehow were to make all the numbers and the timing work to recall her, basically we'd be probably replacing her with another Wynn-Holtz. So what we instead we're doing now is we're making as much publicity as we can to what her comments were, to what she said, asking her to resign voluntarily, which we don't anticipate she's actually going to do.
No, and she's already actually signed on as running in November. So we know that she's not going to resign, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is make all the voters of District 30 in Adams County aware and involved, because the turnout, the reason she won by about 800 votes.
No, I'm sorry, 106 votes.
That was it? Oh, wow. Okay.
106 votes.
She won by 106 votes of 18,000 people that turned out, which was a terrible turnout. So basically she won because the turnout was just awful.
Yes.
And by a razor thin margin. So what we're doing is making sure that that seat, and it has been Democratic for a long time, goes back to a Democrat. And I think and we're not going to stop, by the way. It's not like that we just did this and now we're going to say, OK, our job is done here. We are going to be pushing forward.
What we really did. So let's talk about that for a minute. So
yeah.
We partnered with CARE2 and they had these 63,000 signatures. And we thought, you know, we talked to CARE2. Lacey at CARE2 and Chris Burley at CARE2 have been instrumental in this campaign.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Price, you might have seen Chris on the news yesterday if you were watching the News Bites. You saw Rachel, too, of course, and maybe me in the background, but that's not
important. Yeah, all of us were there. So what we decided was CARE2 attempted to deliver these petitions to her electronically, and they were blocked from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The campaign did not accept them. And so we took the extra step of saying, okay, fine. CARE2 put the cost of printing on themselves and printed out all 63,000 signatures, and we decided to deliver them personally to her office. Now, obviously, this was publicized. We wanted people to know we were doing it. We wanted people to come out if they wanted to support us
mm-hmm.
in this petition delivery. And so that's what we did on Tuesday.
Right. And I'll get some more into the logistics of why we did. We got a lot of questions. Why did you guys do it at noon? Why did you give us so little lead time? And there's more. There's more that if you want to be there on the steps with us of the Capitol building, you are going to have your opportunity. And we'll get to that in a minute. But
yes.
Go on, Rachel.
Yes. So we went. We showed up about 10:30 a.m. just to make sure that we were there in ample time. We had been contacted by Channel 7 News in Denver, which is an ABC affiliate station here locally, that they wanted to do an interview with me and with Chris about what we were doing. So we showed up early, did that interview, and then a whole bunch of press showed up.
Yep.
Part thanks to CARE2. They released a press release to all the different local networks and then also non-local people. So we had Channel 4, Channel 7. So Channel 4 is CBS, Channel 7 is ABC. Colorado Public Radio is our local NPR affiliate.
Yeah.
We also had three independent papers, the Colorado Statesman, the Aurora Sentinel, and the Colorado Independent that showed up. All of them we did press with. They took pictures, and they also waited around while we waited until noon. And it was actually a little afternoon because we were still doing interviews. When we attempted to go into the Capitol building to deliver the signatures from the petition directly to her office. We did that, and shockingly, her office was closed, locked, and no one would answer.
They were not in session, by the way, so she could have very well been there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all of us agree that she was trying very hard not to accept these signatures.
Oh, she knew we were coming, too.
Yeah.
We had some tip-off that she knew what was going on and we were coming. So it's not like we were blindsiding her necessarily. But
no, I mean, it was all over public media or you know what I mean, social media.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in to her office, no answer, and we were told by a member of the kind of security detail of the house that we needed to go to a different office, which was kind of like their services office, which is a bunch of admins who help the people. We went there, and a very nice woman helped us, called someone that was her supervisor. And we were told that because it was a partisan issue, that they couldn't accept them. And so we had to actually deliver them to the minority office itself. So the admins at the Capitol who help whoever's in office couldn't accept them, which makes sense to me.
Sure.
So we had to go to the minority office because Denver and, well, Colorado in general is controlled by Democrats at this point. So we had to go to the minority speaker's office. So we did that, and we went down there, and they weren't there either. But their office was open.
Yeah.
And a very lovely woman who works next door talked to us for a few moments, asked what we were doing, and we asked—
All these people look very surprised with all the cameras and press everywhere that they were not expecting this.
No, not at all.
And we kind of weren't either. So
no, exactly.
Yeah, this was all very organic.
Yeah, it was. So we asked her, like, do you think it's okay if we just leave them on the desk? The door's open. And she sort of said, well, at first she said, what are you doing to Representative Winholtz? Are you guys being ornery?
And that's the term she used.
That's
which is
the
great.
Term she used. And
I guess we kind of are being ornery.
Yeah, and I said, yeah, a little bit. And Chris, she said, well, we're pretty upset at what she said, and we're asking for her resignation. And she went, oh. I'm very surprised. And I asked her, do you think it's okay if we leave the petitions on the desk of the admin for the speaker, minority speaker?
Yeah, if I can just interject something here. She had a pretty good reason to ask that question. And I'm not going to hijack this whole conversation, but if you go to Texas, there was an incident recently at the State House where you are now allowed to be, I think, armed, or they're working on that, maybe not all the time, but some armed folks actually sort of ambushed a state representative to give him all kinds of flack and be very ornery. And you can't – fortunately, you cannot be armed in the Denver Capitol.
No.
So we were not armed. We were armed with 63,000 signatures on a petition.
Yes.
Which is mightier than bullets in some ways.
I'd like to add one point to this, which is when we went to room 307, which was the secretary's office, the admins, Chris Burley from CARE 2 had a phone call with the sort of chief of staff of that agency or that department or whatever it was. And they told him because it was partisan, we had to deliver it to room 200, which was before below, and it was the minority office, blah, blah, blah. So we did that, and afterward, this woman came up to us with a absolutely panicked, terrified look on her face. And she said, did you just deliver recall petitions to the minority office? And we said, no. This is an online petition asking for the recall of representatives.
Resignation.
Yeah, resignation. I'm sorry. Resignation. And she was like immediately calmed because she thought that we were actually delivering 63,000 petition signatures for the recall of Winholtz to the minority office, which it would not go to. It would go to the Secretary of State's office.
Right.
And so she was really relieved. But anyway, we opened the door. No one was there. We called out for anyone. No one was there. We left them on the desk. And we had a letter to go on top of the box that explained what these petitions were, who they were going to, and where they should go. And we have press covering that. So if she says, I didn't get them or I didn't know,
that's absolutely. No. Now, since we've been so mired in this and then today trying to catch up like with the rest of our normal lives,
yeah,
I haven't seen anything in terms of a response. I know that she gave sort of a two-sentence statement before we delivered them because I think it was Channel 7 or one of the others. It might have been Denver Post contacted her and said, you know, these people are dropping off these petitions today, you know, and she said, well, I never blamed the victims, but something, something. It was
right. The only public comment that she's made since her original comments that spawned this whole thing. And what she said was, I've never blamed the victims. And as a person who's pro-life, I'm opposed to any loss of life. Now, to her credit, that's true. She didn't blame the police officer, the veteran, and the mother that were murdered.
Not directly.
She didn't recognize them either. She didn't talk about them at all. All she said was that the fault lay at the feet of Planned Parenthood because they murder babies.
Right. So, and vicariously, that would mean anybody who gets services at Planned Parenthood or supports Planned Parenthood.
That, you know, it's not the fault of the guy who murdered these people or the people who inspired him to murder these people. It's the fault of Planned Parenthood and that these victims were really just, I don't know, wrong place at the wrong time.
Is well, that wasn't the name of her post sort of violence where it starts?
Yes.
So, you know, we're not making a huge leap of logic here in terms of what she said and sort of tying that to either trying to eliminate blame or putting the cause of, you know, of this violence upon Planned Parenthood itself.
Right. So, yeah, she didn't say, it's that cop's fault he got murdered. But she also didn't say, you know, I really feel for the families of the victims today, and I'm really sorry for them, and it's really terrible. What she said was nothing about the victims and nothing about the perpetrator. She said, Planned Parenthood is to blame because violence begets violence.
Right.
And it's Planned Parenthood's fault for killing babies. And that's not a direct quote, but that's really what she said. So, no, she didn't blame the victims directly. But she also didn't have much sympathy for them. And I was asked by a reporter during the press junket if she were to apologize, would that help things? And I said, you know, she was given the opportunity in the days after she said what she said to apologize. And what she said was, I meant what I said.
Yeah. No, she doubled down.
She'll take it back. She doubled down and she said no.
As did. The Republican, the official Republican Party statement of the state of Colorado.
We're not going to push her out. We're not going to do anything. They didn't say that they supported what she said, but
they didn't say they rejected it either.
But they said they supported her and would continue to support her. So for us, this seems like a partisan issue. I understand. And if you're pro-life, you're probably not listening to this. But even for those people that are,
well, you have a story about that, too, that you could get to, including some close people close to you.
Like this is not a story about someone saying something someone thought was offensive. This is, for me, a story about an elected state official condoning terrorism and murder because she disagrees with a law that is the law of the land, right? The rule of law. And the story I have behind that was, so I knew I was going to be interviewed by the news, and we talked about it in our group, and we talked about sort of the ins and outs of how that would work and the optics of it and that kind of stuff. And so I called my parents because they watch local news, and I thought it would be wise to tell them that I might be on it and here's what I'm doing. And they sort of knew that I was doing this thing but didn't really understand. And so after it happened, I talked to them, and my dad, who is famous on this podcast now, which I think he would hate, said, you know...
Well, wait a minute. Famous why?
Well, we talk about him all the time.
But give the backstory as to why.
Right. So
what is interesting about him?
So he is conservative. We are really close.
Almost always votes Republican, right?
Always votes Republican. Always votes Republican. But he and I are like very, very close. And we argue about politics constantly, but he and I have a tremendous respect for one another.
Same with me and my dad, except we've given up talking politics many years ago, but
yeah, we're just continuously trying to convince each other of things, and it makes everyone else in my family crazy, right? They hate it, and they're like, oh God, Dad and Rach are arguing again, and it's a whole thing. But he and I don't see it as arguing. We see it as sort of like giving the other side the right answer. It doesn't work, but we've been doing this since I was about 12 years old.
Right.
And so I was talking to him after the event, and I had sent them this Denver Post article that we'll probably put in the show notes about the event, and I'm prominently featured, and there's a video. And he said, you know, after we talked about it and I saw that Denver Post article, I decided to look up what she said.
Right.
And I read what she said. And holy shit, it was really awful.
This is him talking now.
This is my dad. And he's like, no wonder you're upset.
Yeah.
How is everyone not upset? Whether you agree on abortion or not, and he's like, I'm not pro-abortion. And I was like, Dad, no one's pro-abortion. But you're pro-choice, right? And he's like, I guess. But whether or not you're pro-abortion, you can't just be going and shooting people because you don't like the law. You can't just be going into places and shooting cops and veterans and moms because you don't like the law. Like, we can't have that. Like, no wonder you're upset. Because I was reading what she was saying, and, like, that's awful. You can't say that Planned Parenthood is to blame because this crazy person. So even my dad, one of the more conservative people that I know, who I fight with constantly and love dearly, was on my side and was like, I'm with you. That's awful. She should not be a representative
at all. That goes to an important point. If you live in the bubble that our dads live in, where it's all Fox News all the time, maybe some local conservative radio, you're not going to hear about these comments because they're horribly embarrassing. Maybe on some very, very extreme, you know, right-wing talk radio, you'll hear about them and people say that she's right and whatever. But for the most part, you're not going to be exposed to this. You're not going to hear the truth of the truth of the matter.
Well, and that was his point, was like, I Googled it, right?
Right.
I gave it a Goog. I read what she said. Was really offended, and I understand what you were offended. And he was very supportive. He's like, you know, of course he had concerns about the crazy right wingers and whether they would come after me and do I want to be in the media publicly supporting this. And you know, we had a little row about that, about I agree, and we have talked about it. And how do you feel about voting in the same block as the people who you're afraid are going to or could potentially hurt your daughter?
Yeah.
You know, and he was very offended by that because he's not one of those people. And I get that. And I wasn't implying that he was. But it is a point that, like, he votes the same way they do. And he has most of the same opinions that they do. And yet he's trying to guard me from the people that he most closely relates to politically. Right? And I think that was hard for him. I do.
You there, Rach?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, that was, I thought, really interesting. In the end, we got pretty good press coverage from ABC, CBS, and then the local reporters we mentioned earlier. Lots of those are on Facebook if you want to read the articles or see the videos. And our plan going forward, if you want to talk about that real quick, Trev.
Yeah. So what the petition basically said is we're giving her 30 days to resign voluntarily, which, of course, we don't not expect her to do. And we filed for another permit to have another demonstration at the courthouse. And this one will be at a reasonable time of day that people can actually get off work, 5 or 6, and we'll have enough daylight, hopefully, you know, by then, another month or so. And then we will have some speakers lined up in terms of from folks from NARAL. We had a couple people from NARAL, the local chapter, show up, and hopefully from Planned Parenthood, and some other individuals that we know that just want to share their stories of, you know, having free access to legal abortion or services they've gotten from Planned Parenthood that are, you know, necessary for their health.
Right.
So we're going to have a much, much bigger presence and rally in about a month's time, and we will announce when that is taking place.
Yeah.
In terms of using the funds and our 3,000-plus Facebook followers and all our Care2 followers at this point for political means, even though this is not officially going to be a recall campaign now, we are still going to be very much involved. And if any of the Democratic candidates who are running and are seeking an endorsement from our group in this local race would like to talk to us, we would like to talk to them. We have reached out to the Democratic Party, and they have given us some guidance, but they haven't really wanted to be involved in this campaign directly, which is fine.
And we sort of understand that. You know,
right.
We understand why, and we get it. You know, NARAL has been really, really helpful, and they are really in support of what we're doing. They don't want to see her recalled, and we understand sort of now the politics of we didn't know she was on the ballot, and so we've sort of switched our focus. I think what's important to note is that we're not recalling her because we don't want to.
Right.
It's that we can't. And so instead, we're going to use those funds to highlight what she said. And also, anything we don't use in this effort will still go to exactly what we said it would go to, which is the victims' families.
Right, right. And also, if there is a candidate who is in line with exactly what we're trying to do here and wants to win back that seat in District 30, by all means, we are interested in partnering up. And, hey, again, this is a woman who won by 108 votes. We have 3,200 people, I think, in our Facebook group alone. A good number of them live in Adams County, certainly probably way more than that 108 total with terrible turnout. So this could be the difference in winning an election. So if you're out there and you would like our support, you'd like to talk to us, now's the time to do it.
If you're a person out there who lives in Colorado and is willing to come talk about your experience with Planned Parenthood or anything else, please reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you and potentially have you be a part of the rally. I understand that it's sensitive and it's hard to talk about, but I think that, you know, increasingly in social media and other avenues, women have been able to kind of come out and speak about their experiences. It doesn't have to be about abortion. It can be about anything. It can be about birth control. It can be about STIs. Whatever Planned Parenthood has done for you, if you want to talk about why you support them, we'd be happy to talk to you about coming to the rally and speaking on their behalf, because that's what this is about. It's not just Wendholz is a jerk. It's about women's reproductive rights and women's health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so let me explain this. Because we've gotten a lot of questions and we've been so busy working on, gathering these petitions and delivering them and then the next steps that I haven't been able to address everybody. So in short, the recall Wendholz campaign is now a remove Wendholz campaign. And, you know, that'll happen in November with the elections. So that is our aim and our focus. And we have a much broader aim now, too, because of all the feedback we've gotten and the people we've gotten to partner in and the people we've talked to at NARAL and at Care2 and just all the individual folks out there. This can be part of a much, much bigger movement and effort to support Planned Parenthood, to support reproductive rights, because this is something that, you know, hasn't really been talked about too much. It was talked about a little bit, early on in the presidential campaign. And, you know, with the fake doctored videos, which this is magnificent timing, isn't it, that on Monday it was announced that the people who put together the fake sting video after the governor of Texas ordered a criminal probe, an investigation, that those were actually the people that got arrested and Planned Parenthood was actually cleared, as they have been in a bunch of other states where they tried to witch hunt.
Let's point out, this is not San Francisco. This
right,
is
right,
a place
right.
where I really wanted to do some harm, and it turned out that not only did they clear Planned Parenthood, the grand jury, of any wrongdoing based on all the evidence available, but they also indicted the people who made the videos on criminal charges because it was fraudulent and it did impede federal investigations and all kinds of things. Like, these people did wrong. And in Texas, of all places.
Yeah. So that was, we didn't propose to time it like that. It just kind of happened. But that doesn't mean that Planned Parenthood is – that the assaults are going to let up in any way, shape, or form. And in fact, it's just a matter of time in the campaign season that we have going on here at the state, local, and the presidential levels that this is going to be a topic that's going to come up, and you can bet that Planned Parenthood and women's reproductive rights are going to be in the crosshairs. This report that came out is not going to change much of anything.
And I think for us, you know, as we talked about on the last podcast, you know, for people of my generation and women that I know, this is something that we want to have our representatives and the people who are running for president of our party talk about. And this is another way to sort of make that happen. It hasn't been talked about in the debates. It hasn't been talked about much on the campaign trail other than Hillary getting the Planned Parenthood
endorsement,
sort of seal of approval. Yeah, endorsement. But it's something that needs to be talked about. And we would like to help that go forward.
Yep, so that about wraps it up as far as what we're doing here locally. Again, if you want to get involved, go online. The new Facebook group is now called Remove Joanne Winholtz, or Committee to Remove Joanne Winholtz. You can find it on Facebook. The website is still called recalljoannewinholtz.com, but that will be changing soon, obviously, as the focus of the campaign has changed. But check that out. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back and talk about some current politics going on around the country. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Testimony. Sorry for the technical problems earlier. First half, I think we got that straightened out now. So lots going on. The political world and news doesn't stop for our local political shenanigans.
No, it does not.
So lots going on, and we're just getting caught up here. Oregon, the Bundy, well, the son of Bundy, Cliven Bundy, and his bird sanctuary militia-ish followers who occupied that bird sanctuary in rural Oregon and made a bunch of sort of vague demands, unfortunately now has ended in a bit of tragedy, but hopefully not too much more. Rachel, do you want to give the specifics on what has gone down here in the past 24 hours in Oregon?
All right, so it's been pretty crazy the last 24 hours. Apparently, five people who were the leadership of the movement or militia or whatever you would like to call them went and met with the sheriff of Harney County, which is the county in which the Melhuir Wildlife Refuge is a part of, and made their demands. And basically said that they would request that the two ranchers that were put into federal custody last month be released, and that the federal lands that they were occupying be given back to the people, and specifically that they be given back to private people, which of course isn't possible. So after they met with that sheriff...
As if the sheriff had the authority to do any of that.
Right. And he said, like, they made these demands and I wasn't able to do any of them, nor would any person of any level of government be able to do so.
Right.
So they left. And after they left, they were pulled over by Harney County Sheriff's Department and the FBI on the highway driving.
They set up like a roadblock is what I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically pulled them over. They're being really sketchy about the details of that event because one person died.
Right.
His name was Lavoy Finicum.
He's the blue tarp guy, if you've been watching on MSNBC.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's like kind of a spokesperson of their campaign and said, like, I'd rather die than go to jail. He kind of always put himself as a martyr and has become one for them.
Right.
Details about how he died or why they're not releasing. But
well, per one official release was that he charged them in his truck. Like he floored it to try to run them over. And they shot him in self-defense. That's one side of the story. Some other witnesses there have something different. Who knows? We don't know yet.
Right. They're not releasing details. But he died. Lavoy Finicum. Five other people were arrested during that traffic stop. They were the leaders of the movement. They included both of the Bundy brothers, Ammon and Ryan.
And Ryan,
Bundy.
Right.
Ryan Bundy sustained minor injuries during the traffic stop. He was treated at a local hospital and then released back to the FBI, who then later arrested him. The other people that were arrested were Ryan Waylon Payne, Brian Cavalier, Peter Santilli, Joseph Donald O'Shaughnessy, and Shauna Fox.
Yeah, just to stop one second, Pete Santilli hosts a crazy right-wing radio show who basically eggs on a lot of this stuff. So interesting to see that he got arrested. He was also big in the Obama birther conspiracy stuff back in the day. So, yeah, he's a savory character. But, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know anything about any of them. That's interesting to me. I know something about the woman who was arrested, Shauna Fox. Her husband came out and basically said she's not from there. She's from a different state.
She's from Georgia.
Yeah. And he said, like, oh, she's a patriot and she really has nothing to do with this, but decided to get involved because she thinks the overreach of federal government is too high and so decided to get involved. So he's sort of advocating for her release.
Yeah, it's important to understand it's a mishmash of people and a million different gripes. They're not necessarily even on the same page. It's just basically something, something, the government, something.
Right.
Obama.
And yeah, exactly. And it's important to note that up to this point, you know, these people have been given really free rein of the surrounding towns in this place, and they've been able to come and go from this refuge.
For the most part, yeah.
No one's has stopped them. And the Harney County Sheriff spoke after the arrest today and basically said, you know, there's been some harassment and some kind of like shitty behavior on behalf of some of these protesters in their county and in specific cities. In particular, his wife had her tires slashed.
Yeah.
There's been some, you know, bar brawls and some sort of other things that have happened.
Yeah, the surrounding small towns are apparently pretty divided. Some people support these people. Some people don't want them, you know, just want them to go away. And so it's causing lots of tumult.
But, right, it is. But what I thought was interesting was that they are sort of coming from the refuge because no one sent snacks. They sent dildos instead.
And gummy dicks, thanks to our friends in Houston.
Thanks, Katie. But that they've really been causing, you know, some trouble in these local towns that are really like rural Oregon towns that have nothing to do with any of this, and they've been coming in and really creating some problems, and that the local communities have kind of had enough.
Yeah.
Said, like, you know, this has got to be done. So anyway, after they met with the sheriff of the county, they left, were pulled over, arrested, that guy died. And then the FBI and local officials have set up checkpoints and roadblocks around the refuge. Essentially,
to keep them from escaping.
Well, two things, right? So one, to keep them from escaping, and two, to keep other people from coming in. Apparently, the group put out a Facebook post that said, you know, these people were arrested. It's awful. Now's the time to come support us.
Yeah, like, come armed, and let's have a big shootout.
Yeah. And so the FBI said, like, no one's coming in.
Yeah. And from what I've heard, they haven't really had to stop anybody from coming in.
No, yeah, agreed.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that. That's just some, like, one news blurb I read. So
right.
Maybe they stopped a bunch of people trying to come in. I don't know. But from what I've read so far, the cavalry did not come.
That is my understanding also. I don't know. I'm not on the ground there, so I don't know, but that's my understanding also. The interesting thing for me was that they said, you know, anyone who wants to leave, first of all, everyone should leave.
Yeah.
Secondly, anyone who wants to leave may do so without arrest.
Yeah.
They have to pass through a checkpoint and be identified.
What Republicans would scream about is amnesty.
Right.
From breaking the law.
Yes.
Because they're the Law and Order Party, remember?
Yes, exactly. So, like, we get that you were kind of just here for God knows what reason, but if you want to leave, leave.
That you organized an armed takeover of a federal building, and now we're just letting you walk away because white people.
Because you're white?
Wait, did I just say all that out loud?
I was
just thinking that, but.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it's really been something in social media about, you know, what happens to black people when they walk on the street and what happens to white people when they point guns at law enforcement.
Or even if they do something similar. I mean, there were some incidents, I think, in the 70s and 80s where there were federal or state buildings that were taken over by
Native Americans
or armed black people, and the way the response and the way it was handled was much, much different.
I think we can even look at Occupy Wall Street, and we can look at you know, a video of the kids getting pepper sprayed in the face at, like, point-blank range sitting in a park.
Right.
And these people are like, come and go as you please. Once you get tired of this, we'll eventually let you go and not arrest you. As opposed to a guy walking down the street with a thing of Skittles gets shot. You know, I mean, I think there's definitely some race stuff.
Yeah, there's some stuff to talk about. But sort of back to the particulars, one thing I do want to mention, to Ammon Bundy's credit, and you're not going to hear me say this often, but
that's a weird sentence coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, he released a statement from custody tonight that basically said, hey, everybody, go home. It's over. Go home.
Yeah.
So that's good. Now, obviously, they wouldn't have let him release a statement saying, you know, start shooting. But as far as we know, he did actually say through his attorney and wanted it disseminated to the people still there. It's over. Go home. See your kids. Let's not have any more bloodshed.
Right.
So kudos to that.
Agreed. There have been really conflicting statements coming out of the people still there.
There's not many. There's like 10 left, right?
Well, they don't know, so I can't comment. I don't know about that. But what I will say is that the people that have spoken to the press have had a really interestingly wide range of emotions about what to do next. One guy said, I don't know how one dead cowboy is a peaceful resolution, referring back to Lavoie Finicum.
Right.
Another guy said, to be clear, this property will never go back to the federal government over my dead body.
Sure. Yeah.
And then there's been reports of people leaving, going through the checkpoints and just like,
well, none of that surprises me because this was never a united front. This was, from everything I understand, just a mishmash of people with one gripe or another against federal or in some cases state government just showing up and having a tantrum.
Yes,
and since they came together under those circumstances, doesn't surprise me that they would dissipate under those same circumstances.
Right, and the exact reason that the FBI and the Harney County Sheriffs arrested the people they did at the time that they did was because this is the leadership. These are the people who are sort of the glue.
Yeah, cut the head off.
And everyone just went, oh, why are we here? I don't even, you know, they even interviewed a few people who were like, I don't really know. I hate the government.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, okay. And then those people went
home. Bargle, as David Waldman would say. Bargle.
Yeah, exactly.
Bargle.
So I think that there was also some backlash from certain people and in the media about, like, why didn't you step in sooner? Why didn't it become more of a thing?
Yeah, there's theories floating around about that, too.
The FBI came in and said, look, these were unoccupied buildings. No one was at risk. No lives were at risk. There was no harm to be had.
Yeah, if within the first few days the FBI or the ATF went in guns a-blazing, that would have been a bloodbath. Nobody wanted that. I don't want that.
No one wants that. Locals don't want that. FBI especially doesn't want that. And to say, like, let them have it out. Let them have their little moment. And we're going to, you know,
approach this tactfully.
Yeah. And they said, like, tactically. They're like, why would we go in with no one's at risk, no lives are at risk?
Well, some of my
do that.
The birders probably wanted them to go in immediately, guns a-blazing. But Not even kidding with that.
Oh, my God, those birders. I love them the most. You know I do.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I think that that situation is very quickly being de-escalated.
Hopefully, and likely, hopefully. Fingers crossed. And, look, I would have just assumed this end with no loss of life. I you know, I'm not going to joke or quip about the TARP guy unfortunately ending up dead, no matter what the circumstance was. And, and look, just because these are crazy-ish right-wing militia people, I'm not necessarily going to take the side of whatever law enforcement says as verbatim as to what actually happened in his death.
Sure.
I'll be just as critical. I want to hear the facts and know what happened, and we may or may not ever really know the facts and
sure.
what happened.
And they are being sketchy about it. They are definitely not releasing facts and details about what happened during the traffic stop or why and all that stuff. And that stuff will come forward later. You know, there are seven people in custody right now, and those seven people will have their day in court, and they'll have lawyers, and they'll be able to present their side. And I think that's great. I think they should.
Absolutely.
But for right now, what we know is that, you know, the leadership of the occupation of this refuge have been arrested, and that most people that, as far as we can tell, are sort of like, well, honey, you want to go home? I mean, like, they, you know, their leadership has been dismantled. And so I think that in the coming days, we'll see them dismantle as well, and people go home and they'll be identified. And I don't know
I mean,
has said if they're going to make charges against these people that they identify or not. They haven't said much. They've just said
there's still a good chance that one or two people just hellbent on being a martyr for something, something evil government is going to hunker down with their AR-15s and, you know, they'll go out literally guns a-blazing. I hope that's not the case, but there's
and
a chance, there's a chance of that.
And some of them have said that today, you know, with these comments of, this land will never go back to
the I know, but if
I body kind of stuff, and you're like,
but if you took even 1% of threatening internet comments seriously, you know, we'd be in perpetual chaos and world war all the time.
Sure. No, this is not internet comments. This is actually a protester who's there, but
but the same result. They're releasing it to social media saying, you know, you can take my gun when you pry it from my cold dead hands. It's easy to say to your Facebook followers, and
you really
in real life, when the FBI is, you know, throwing flashbangs through the door, it's different. So we'll see. Hopefully, there are no more casualties in this standoff. But that's where we are.
Yeah.
Anything else to add about that, Rach?
I don't think so. No.
Meanwhile, are we getting into presidential politics next?
We are. We're going to do something a little more fun. We're going to talk about Donald Trump.
Is that he first? Because there's stuff to talk about on the other side, too. But let's talk about Trump.
Let's do Trump. It's so fun. Because that was kind of a sad story. So we're going to talk about Trump and the debates and the Iowa caucuses and what the fuck is going on there.
Yeah, I think I have a handle on what's going on, sort of. But basically what happened was how far do we want to go back with this? Well, what happened was Trump – is it a town hall or a debate?
It's a debate.
It's tomorrow,
it's
right?
Tomorrow night. Yeah.
Right. It's the last
debate before the Iowa caucuses on Monday.
Right. So Republican debate. And Trump said something to the effect of I don't really want to do this debate, or maybe I won't even do it because I can't stand Megyn Kelly and she's a lightweight and blah, blah, blah.
So just really quick.
Yeah.
This is the – first debate was by Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
Megyn Kelly was a
moderator.
Thank you. And she said some things to Donald Trump that he didn't like.
She put Trump on the spot for saying horrible, disgusting, misogynistic, sexist things on social media.
And then in his
reality show.
Exactly. Yeah. And he attacked her for a couple of weeks. And then every following debate has been by some other network with some other debater.
Right.
Moderator, whatever. So this one is the last one before the Iowa caucus, which will be on Monday. It's with Fox News.
We'll be podcasting that night, by the way.
We will. Yeah. Ugh. Megyn Kelly is going to be on the panel. And Donald Trump's very upset about that. Doesn't want her to do it. And in fact, I think I have a lot of opinions about this, but the facts are that he demanded that she be removed from the panel. Fox basically said, fuck you, she's going to be on it.
Yeah, and then it goes a crazy step further, but go ahead.
He said, then I'm not coming, and they said, okay, great. And so
Let's back up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
What actually happened, and this is amazing, is that Roger Ailes himself penned what he thought was a very, very LOL press release. Do you have it in front of you, or should I just paraphrase?
Just paraphrase.
It was a sarcastic, snarky. This is an official Fox News press release. We have it on good authority that the Ayatollah Khomeini and Vladimir Putin are not going to be nice when they meet with Trump. So Trump will need to find out from his Twitter followers whether he should actually meet them. Now, oh, maybe Rachel thinks that's funny. I don't know.
I think it's hilarious.
Do you? Well, see, Roger Ailes has a fan of his comedy out there. Her name's Rachel Hutchison. What do you know? But anyway, against the advice of people close to him at Fox who said, don't release that. Don't release that. It's going to cause a huge headache. He did anyway because he's Roger Ailes and he can do whatever the F he wants. And then Trump said, okay, I'm not coming to your debate. You know, F you. How dare you insult me? You're the only reason that all these millions of people watch this stupid debate, which he's absolutely right about.
Okay, but I'll back you up a couple minutes because that is what he's saying now.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing and what I researched about this was that when he heard that Megyn Kelly was going to be a moderator is when he started to get upset.
Well, yeah, he started to get upset, but he officially said, no, screw you guys, I'm going home, when Roger Ailes released that snarky press release.
Correct. The reason he released that press release was because of Donald Trump's objection to Megyn Kelly being a moderator.
Right, right, right.
And so Donald Trump is currently trying to say, I wasn't mad about Megyn Kelly. I was mad about Roger Ailes saying this.
Whatever.
It's important because the reason Roger Ailes said that was because of Trump's response to Megyn Kelly being a moderator.
Right, right.
So it's important to have the timeline, right? Like, Trump isn't – Ailes doesn't say the thing he said without Donald Trump saying the thing about Megyn Kelly.
But Trump supporters don't care either way.
But I'm going to disagree with you on that in a minute. But let's just get through the facts. Okay. So go ahead.
Well, yeah. So now what Trump has said, and this is kind of where it gets gross, is that, okay, well, instead of showing up at the debate, I'm going to have my own town hall forum, whatever, and it's going to be a big event, and we're going to raise all these money for the troops and the wounded warriors and the veterans, because I love the veterans so much.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz needs to be in this debate and have a good performance because he's still behind a little bit, and he desperately needs to win Iowa. So he is doing everything and anything and everything he can to either shame Trump or make him come back.
He's calling him Donald Duck right now.
Donald Duck. And, he's calling him. I mean, everything he should be doing, because he does need for Trump to be there in the debate or else nobody's going to watch. And
I don't think that's true, but we can talk about that in a minute. Go ahead.
We'll see. And this is where it gets kind of gross, is that Cruz is now saying, His super PAC and his supporters are saying, if Trump does show up to the debate like he promised, then we're going to donate however many million dollars to the veterans and the wounded warriors. So basically, these people are so nakedly and blatantly using support the troops and wounded veterans as a pawn in their political game. And now some veterans groups, I don't know about all, but some veterans groups are starting to get a little pissed off about it and seeing how disingenuous this is from Trump and Cruz.
Yeah.
But it's so obvious to me, and it's so blatant and kind of gross. I'm just wondering when the media is actually going to step up and say, gosh, you use the troops. These are actual people, you know, coming back with PTSD and missing limbs and everything else. And, and you're using this and, you know, you clearly don't give a crap about them. It's just a buzzword.
Right. So, okay. So I did a little like backstory, kind of like figure out what's going on. And because Trump put out these tweets that were like, it has nothing to do with, quote, lightweight reporter Megyn Kelly. It has to do with the PR snarky comments that Fox News made. That's why I'm not showing up, blah, blah, blah. So I sort of dug into it.
Yeah.
And that makes no sense from a timeline perspective, right? So
are you saying Trump is lying?
I'm saying Trump might not be authentically truthful. Isn't that crazy?
I'm shocked.
I know. I know it's hard, honey. So essentially he found out that Megyn Kelly was going to be part of the debate.
Well, he didn't know that for months, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. So Fox News, I think you and I have established that they hate him. Right.
Oh, it's all out war now, which is delicious and interesting and fascinating, but we'll get into that.
Oh my God. Give me a minute. Yeah. Because I have so many things to say about this. But so he found out she was going to be part of the panel.
Yeah.
And he objected. And according to Fox News sources, he spent about 4 days behind the scenes viciously attacking her and like being like really using all of his momentum
to try to get her off the panel.
Trump power and all of his I win everything to get her off the panel.
And I think we talked about this last time, and I think I predicted that would happen. And I'm a little surprised if that's how it happened, and Trump and Fox rather actually stood their ground on this.
Well, I don't know that we talked about Megyn Kelly, but yes, it was really interesting to me that anyway, let me just tell you the facts and then I'll tell you what I think is interesting. So he went on like a 4-day behind the scenes kind of like barrage against her.
Sure.
Why she can't be a person, why this is terrible, why she's a loser, why whatever. And Fox News said basically like, fuck off. Like, nah. Like, she's going to be the person, and if you don't want her to be the person, don't show up. And he said, I won't. And they said, so basically, they called his bluff. He said he fought for 4 days and called her, according to Fox News, like, every name in the book, and just, like, viciously attacked her.
Sure.
And they said, like, no. And then he said, well, I'm not showing up. And they said, okay, don't. And he said, okay, I won't.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really interesting to me about that is that after that dialogue, after that deal, whatever you want to call it, happened, Fox News put out a sort of sarcastic remark about how how he would deal with Putin if he can't deal with a lady reporter.
Sure.
Which is offensive on its own terms, but also offensive to Donald Trump.
Sure. It's Fox News. That'll offend everybody all the way around. That's their job.
They offend me no matter what they do. Yeah. But so they put out this sort of snarky remark about like, oh, you're afraid of Megyn Kelly, but you're not afraid of Vladimir Putin. Like, how are you going to deal with him?
Which Cruz is parroting verbatim.
Yeah, he is. And he should. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do. But what's really interesting now is that Trump is coming back and saying, I'm not mad about Megyn Kelly. I don't care about her.
Right.
What I'm mad about is Fox News saying something snarky in their PR department about me. If they would apologize for that, I would show up. And what I'd like to point out is that the reason they made that remark was because of his remarks about Megyn Kelly. Like, his timeline doesn't work.
Well, sure, sure. Again, though, I'm not sure anybody really cares the why. What it ultimately comes down to is that Trump is saying, I'm the king, and Roger Ailes is saying, no, I'm the king. And so you have two egomaniacal, megalomaniac bullies that are just going to butt heads over this. And
I see it really differently, to be honest. Okay. I think this is a major loss for Trump. I think he flexed his – hear me out. Like, listen to me. He flexed his muscles, and he said, I don't want Megyn Kelly. And they said, too bad. And he said, well, then I won't come. And they said, okay. And he went, oh. And he did it publicly. So here's the two options I see. And you can disagree with me, but we'll have a talk.
Okay.
So he doesn't go, right? Because he said he didn't want Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly's there. Trump's not going to go. I feel like for the people that support Trump, the ones that applauded him when he said I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue.
Right, and they would still support me. Right.
Those are a different kind of people than the ones that would be like, oh, you were scared of a lady reporter? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain weakness inherent in saying, I don't like her and I'm not coming, and he flexed his muscles and he fucking lost.
I think you are
gross. And he's a winner, right? He's a winner. I win everything, and I do the deals, and I'm the winner, and I win everything. But he fucking lost this one.
Okay, let me tell you why I disagree.
Okay.
First of all, Trump wins if he says he wins. And I think you're grossly overestimating the sort of logical transference of his fan base, because that makes more sense than calling it a voter base, because it's a fan base. And if Trump says, this is why I'm doing this or not doing this, and I win, then I think they're just going to go with that. I don't think it has to make any logical sense. I don't think they have to critically think about it and say, well, wait a minute, 1 + 1 doesn't equal potato. I think they'll just nod and agree and say, yeah. And besides, what Trump is saying is, look how mean they're being to me. They're picking on me. They have something against me. And his people just eat that up. So I don't see how there's a wing of Trump supporters there that are going to stop and look at the timeline and think about it and dig into it and apply some critical thinking to it and saying, wait a minute, no, this doesn't make sense. I mean,
can I respond to that?
Yeah,
really?
Absolutely, please.
Which is just that I totally agree. I don't think these people are rational thinkers because they support Trump, obviously.
Right.
I think that the difference is when he said, like, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, I can do anything I want, my supporters are the most loyal, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
He's tapping into this sort of masculine energy of, like, I'm a winner and you're a loser and everything's great. I think he's really stepped into some shit on this because he's saying, I'm a winner, I do what I want, everyone kowtows to me, I do everything. And then he does that and they look at him and go, wait, like, maybe? No, because you did your thing and it didn't work.
I don't see that.
The same people that want him to shoot someone on Fifth Avenue,
yeah,
are the same people that look at his failure to either address a small lady brain or not show up.
But if Trump stands up on the podium and says, I won, I did this and I win, then why does it have to go any further than that?
Frame it to me how he won. He lost.
Well, I'll tell you how he won. First of all, what has the media been talking about all day? There's ostensibly eight Republican candidates. They're going to talk tomorrow for their last shot at Iowa. And who's the one candidate anybody has been talking about all day? Trump. That's how he won, number one. Number two, his supporters are already super pissed off at Megyn Kelly and Fox, and they're kind of dug in on this. So when he says, look, they're being mean to me, and they said this awful snarky thing, so screw them, I won't even show up, I can't picture in my mind any single one of them that think otherwise.
I'm going to disagree with you on that, just slightly.
Well,
I think that the people who love him for his masculinity and his sort of, like, power and, like, I'm a winner and not a loser and blah, blah, blah. But sure. He lost,
yeah,
right?
But
he asked for something. Hold on. He asked for something specific and he didn't get it. And he put his own presence in the debate on the line and still lost. So either way, he does the debate, he's weak. He doesn't do the debate, he's weak.
Well,
Either way, I
don't think he can do the debate at this point. I mean, I think he's
I think he has to.
Yeah, okay.
He can't not do the debate.
No,
right?
But you can't stiff the wounded warrior veterans that you claimed you were going to do a big event for either.
You send some staffers and you do the thing and I don't know. But I think that this is one of those, like,
okay, let me
moments that, like, he fucked himself. He said something before he had the opportunity to get advice that was correct, and he said some shit and he was wrong, and I think he's going to be sorry that he said it. That's all I'm saying.
Like, I completely doubt that, and I'll be shocked and amazed if that's the outcome of this. It's possible. You could very well be right and I could be 100% wrong, and if that's the case, then I'm really looking forward to talking about that on the next podcast. But let me give you another possibility, another angle. Just before we came on, I caught a first few minutes of Lawrence O'Donnell, and he has a very interesting theory. He said that what Trump did was 100% tactical, that, you know, you can use the Megyn Kelly or the Roger Ailes press release excuse. But what he's doing is setting a precedence in saying, screw it, I'm not going to show up to this debate. He'll get away with it, or if he gets away with it, then if he's the nominee and he'll find some gripe about not wanting to debate Hillary Clinton, because we, as we know, if he tried to show up to a debate with Hillary Clinton, it would be an unholy massacre. And he can bow out of that one too. Now, this is not unprecedented. In 1964.
I think that's incredible. Can I just? I'm sorry. That's incredibly extreme.
Not saying I agree with it, but let me.
I just think that's ridiculous.
Let me tell you. Let me give you the logic behind it, though, and why it. Not saying that this is the case, but why it might make sense. First of all, it's not unprecedented. In 1964, Lyndon Johnson had a massive lead over Barry Goldwater, and he said, "Ah, screw it. I'm not going to debate him." Goldwater, of course, went nuts. And some of the media went nuts, but in the end, it didn't matter. You know, he won by a landslide, and he just didn't show up for a debate.
You seriously think Trump versus any of our people are like, no debate's needed, we'll just vote for Trump?
His supporters? Absolutely.
Yeah, but that's a third of a fifth of a tenth of a percent of people in the country. He can't do that. He's not fucking Johnson.
If you were him, would you take that chance or show up to a debate with Hillary Clinton and get completely dressed down on everything from the economy to foreign policy to taxes to everything that he has no effing clue about? Even if you knew you were going to lose either way.
I didn't run that candidate for president, though.
This is the disaster they're in. You're still thinking as if they have a chance to win somehow. This is about.
It's just you're really literally saying to me like he's not going to do a debate with Hillary Clinton.
I'm saying
that's his strategy.
That it makes sense.
He's going to win by not doing a debate.
It makes sense on so many levels. I'm not saying that's not going to happen, and I'm not necessarily saying he would get away with it. Like. I forget who the other guest was, but was just saying, Lawrence, there's no way it's not going to happen. Ever since 1976, it's been that debates are just customary. You can't just duck out of them. But this is a weird year. Everything's been turned on his head. I mean, Donald Trump is the leading presidential candidate on the Republican side, for God's sake. There are no rules anymore.
Politics mean anymore because I don't understand what
it's all crazy. I mean, why not? Hey, and this is a good segue because – there's also some debate drama on the Democratic side. Did you want to talk about that, or do you want me to go ahead?
You go ahead.
Well, this is kind of interesting. MSNBC is talking to all the Democrat campaigns, and they want to have their own non-sanctioned town hall debate thing hosted by Rachel Maddow and Chuck Todd right before the New Hampshire primary.
That sounds lovely. Fuck W. Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah, well, guess who's not too interested in doing that?
Hillary Clinton.
No. She Martin wants O'Malley? To do it.
Who?
O'Malley.
Well, then don't show up, dude. You don't matter.
No, O'Malley wants to talk to anybody who will talk to him. He'd probably come on our podcast. Bernie? Bernie's saying, I don't think so.
Why?
Because he's got a huge lead. He's got a huge lead in New Hampshire. A huge lead, and the only thing, an extra debate hosted by Rachel Maddow, who will ask some excellent questions. The only thing that would accomplish is let Hillary gain ground. So, of course, Bernie's like, I don't know. Now, he may get pressured into it, but right now he's kind of using the party line, and actually for a hot second, actually, you know, the Sanders campaign is usually accusing the Wasserman Schultz and the DNC of siding with Hillary Clinton, and now they're kind of like, well, you know, they sanction these debates and we should just follow the rules. I'm sorry if that's disappointing, but he's a politician too. As much as we love him, that's what's going on in the Democratic side. So that may or may not happen. We may not get an extra non-sanctioned debate before New Hampshire on MSNBC, hosted by Rachel Maddow and Chuck Todd, which would be great. I would love to see it. Hillary wants to do it. O'Malley wants to do it. Bernie right now is dragging his feet.
He's like, he may fuck get it. I'm leading. Let's not do it.
Exactly.
Okay. So he's from New England. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He has a huge lead there, obviously. Mm-hmm. he has to lose because they hear the other, they hear, fuck, Martin O'Malley, like, no one cares. They hear Hillary talk, and he's concerned that they haven't already heard her talk? Like, what is the argument from his side that what?
It's simple math. Let's say you are an undefeated football team, and you have the opportunity to end the season as the first undefeated football team in 50 years, and you have an opportunity to just throw in one more game before the end of the year. The only thing that can possibly happen to keep you from being the undefeated team is playing this game, even if you have a 90% chance of winning it. There's no tactical sense. And this is what Lyndon Johnson did in 1964. He said, I've got this huge lead. There's no reason for me to debate Goldwater. I'm just not going to show up. I'm not going to do it. He didn't. He won. This also happened, I think, in the primary with Ford and I forget who else. Somebody had a huge – I think Ford had a huge lead over whoever he was facing in the primary, or Ford was losing, or however it went. They said, I'm not going to show up, and they didn't, and they won. So debating has been customary. It hasn't been a necessity. And if you're already leading, throwing in an extra debate, unless you're losing momentum, and Bernie's not losing momentum in New Hampshire.
The world is different. I think that that's highly unlikely that people would look kindly on the idea that, you know, our presidential nominees would not debate one another.
But
whether that happened in 1967 or 1970 is fine, but, like, I don't think that people day of, like, sort of technological advancement and Twitter and stuff would put up with that. I think that they would find that incredibly offensive.
Before I get back to Trump, though, let me say Bernie does have an out, right? Because the DNC scheduled and sanctioned a number of debates. This is an extra one, you know, that's just being thrown in sort of on a whim at the last minute. So I don't think it's as damaging if Sanders just says, no, I'm just going to go with what the party wants to do. I think it's a little, me and you think it's a little disingenuous.
Oh, it is. He's always like the disestablishment, like the fuck the party, and we want to say what we need to say.
Right, and he wants to debate the Republicans in the primary. That's obviously not going to be sanctioned by anybody, so it is disingenuous for him to turn around and say, no, I'm not going to debate Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. And ultimately, he may be forced, you know, they may be saying, look, this was a terrible look. If you say no, you really have to say yes. And Hillary's smart. She may be baiting him into saying no. And that would help her and catch up in New Hampshire. But he also may be waiting for Iowa. Maybe he's saying, let's see what happens Monday night. And based on that, he may have more or less incentive to say, okay, go ahead, let's do this. So we'll see.
That's what we were talking about earlier. You know, all of the things we've been talking about are so speculative. Who's going to vote for who and what do the polls say?
Right.
And in the end, Iowa doesn't matter nationally in terms of that it represents what most people think.
No, it doesn't.
Iowa does say here are actual voters and here's how they actually voted.
Right.
Now, it doesn't usually predict much, but it can knock some people out of the running and it can bring some people up a little bit forward. So if Donald Trump takes second or third place in Iowa, that's the end of his campaign. It's over.
Well, he's going to win. Iowa or come second at worst.
Let's say he doesn't go to the debate and he takes third. Let's just imagine that happens.
Okay.
Right? Because what we've been saying this whole time is that no one's going to actually vote for Trump. We think he's cute. We watch him on TV. It's not really going to happen. He didn't do the debate. And it's Cruz Rubio Trump. His debate, his campaign is over. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Let's imagine that happens. His campaign is over. Like, we've all been questioning, will actual real-life people vote for Trump for president? And if he wins second or third, I think his campaign's over. If he wins first by 12%, like, we still have a thing to talk about, right? For Hillary Bernie, I feel like it's less contentious. Like, Hillary's probably going to win Iowa. Bernie's going to win New Hampshire. South Carolina's up, but I think Hillary's going to win that. So, you know.
Well, look, for Bernie to have a realistic chance, I think he's got to pull out a win in Iowa too. I think he's got to win both.
You think he has Iowa and New Hampshire?
Yeah, it's not good enough to split the bill. He's got to win both. If he doesn't win both, I think he's in huge trouble. And he's got a fight. He's got a puncher's chance in Iowa. I mean, they're basically, when you average all the polls, it's like 2 or 3% within the margin of error. So it all depends on turnout. And nobody can ever guess turnout. They think they can guess, and then they never do. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it sucks. Sometimes the young people actually show up. Sometimes it's too cold, and they say, screw it, I'm going home. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen because caucusing is weird, as you know. You got to show up and wait and hang around, and it could be outdoors. It could go till 2 in the morning, and you have a class at 8 in the morning. I mean, there's a lot of variables.
Hang on. You got to talk people into things. That's kind of the whole spirit of the caucus, right? There's three groups, and you talk people into coming to your side.
Think about when you were 18, okay? Or 20, or 22, and you have a friend, and she's not doing anything that night, and you say, hey, friend, why don't you come with me to the Bernie rally? It'll be like an hour and a half. It'll be fun. All our friends are going to be there. We'll go out, and we'll have a beer afterwards, and it's like a social event, right? It's fun. Then it's caucus night. It's a Monday. You may have work or class in the morning. It may go 6 or 7 hours. It is not a party, good time, fun. You are just sitting in a room with people yelling at each other.
Yes.
Are these 20 and 22 and 23-year-olds who will flock to the Bernie rallies, because like I said, they're a social event, are they going to ride out the whole caucus process? A lot of them will, but enough to where everyone who gets called on the phone and says, sure, I'm going to vote for Bernie, is actually going to show up and stay and do it. If I'm in the Bernie Sanders campaign, I'm very worried about that.
The other thing we're worried about is exactly that. So Hillary wins the nomination, right?
Sure.
All those kids who went home after 2 hours because they wanted to have a beer and didn't want to be in the caucus thing anymore.
Right.
How many of them are going to vote? If Hillary Clinton has the nomination, how many of them give a fuck? Yeah, in the general.
She's got work to do there. And I think she can still win it. She could still win a general election even if they stay home. But in terms of us doing what we need to do down ballot, we need them to show up. And she's got a lot of work to do on that front.
So much.
But right now, she's just worried about beating this guy and getting the nomination. And then she could turn her attention to that.
She's going to get the nomination. I'm sorry. I love Bernie, but like we talked about the other day. Like, I'm one of those, I like them both. I like them both for different reasons. I am a supporter of both of them. I would like to see Bernie get the nomination, but that also has a separate set of worries for me.
Yeah.
I like them both. Yeah. My concern is that if Hillary gets the nomination, how is she going to get those 19-year-olds who are going to have a beer after they go to the thing to fucking vote in the general?
Well, that's why I hope there's some leadership. I hope it's not just these groups of kids who are into – there's a fad and it's showing up to these Bernie rallies and being quote-unquote politically active. – Like, if they stay tuned to what's going on, and then Hillary is the nominee, even if it wasn't their guy, and they actually listen to the issues that are at stake, you would hope there's some leadership among these groups to keep them organized. Now, that was the case for Obama, but Obama was the cool black guy. So
How is that for Hillary? I mean, she doesn't have an answer, first of all. And second of all, like, Hillary is amazing, and I fucking love her, but she's not cool. And she's not going to drag out the fucking millennials that are...
Yeah, Bernie's cool in an ironic way, I guess.
Yeah, he's
cool. Your uncle from Brooklyn who shows you his old Led Zeppelin vinyls.
No, he's cool in a way that's like, hey, you should get college for free, and hey, you shouldn't have to pay for healthcare, and hey, in a way that like speaks to our issues.
And Hillary's your aunt waving her fingers at somebody needs to pay for that, and that's not what you want to hear when you're 19.
And it pisses us off because we've been fucking lied to.
Right.
A generation.
No. There's no doubt. She's got a ton of work to do on that front, and we will be doing as much as we can to get the younger voters out, even though we're not as young as a lot of these big-time Bernie supporters, but we're in the wheelhouse.
I'm 32, and I get it. I fucking get it. I love Bernie, but like...
Well, look, if Bernie wins...
You are listening right now, and you are either going to vote for Bernie or not vote. I would encourage you to think about what would happen if Ted Cruz or Donald Trump was the president.
Yeah.
Just think about that for a second. And yeah, it'd be better if Bernie was your president, although he has Congress to face off against. Think about that. But think about Bernie and Hillary both lose, and Donald Trump or Ted Cruz wins the presidency.
Even Marco Rubio.
You're so fucked. Marco, any of the Republicans.
We're all screwed.
So fucked. We're all going to have to move. We're all going to have to
Yeah, kiss your gay and transgender rights goodbye. Kiss your trying to get rid of student loan debt goodbye.
Women's rights, reproductive
kiss
rights.
Kiss your reproductive rights goodbye.
Everything it's that we've the last 8 years is gone.
And if you think it's hyperbole, just listen to their campaign platform and decide for yourself. Don't listen to me when I say, oh, God, a Marco Rubio presidency would be a nightmare. No, go listen to him. Go to his website and see what he has to say about these issues.
First debate. And listen to them talk about how they'd rather women die. They would let women die rather than have them have an abortion.
Right. Except like maybe Kasich, who's going to lose anyway.
They would make an executive action against and make all federal agencies not allow gay marriage, that they would take away the 1,381 rights that we've just secured for gay marriage, that they would say in an executive action, those things don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things that are at stake here without loving Bernie or Hillary or anybody else.
Well, let's not jump the gun here. There's yet to be one caucus or primary vote cast, so. But just a little foreshadowing. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it, but how crazy a political season is this? And I guess we'll see tomorrow night. Is Trump really going to do his own yay, yay, rah for the troops rally? And if it does, and, you know, obviously Fox is going to go on with their debate with or without Trump, who gets the higher ratings? I bet the Trump shindig will.
I doubt it.
Really?
Actually, yeah. I'm going to disagree with you on this. I think that people will watch the debate because Trump's a fucking shit show. And, like, he didn't do it because a lady made his fifis hurt. He's gonna lose he loses.
I disagree. I think he already won.
All right, well, we disagree. So I think he lost. I think no matter what he does, he's a fucking loser. Instead of I'm a winner and Americans should win again.
Well, let's revisit this on caucus night, and we'll have a look and we'll discuss, like, how did this work out for Trump.
Well, on post-debate, now, tomorrow night, I know that you have some things going on. So Dana and I will probably watch the debate. And we are happy to do a podcast about it, if you want.
Yeah, sure.
All pretty sick of fucking debates at this point, but there's many more to come, and we are here for you fuckers to help you not have to watch them. So one way or another, it'll be covered.
Well, we've been rambling for a long time. We are going to be recording another podcast very soon, either later tonight or tomorrow, about some interesting issues that have come to the forefront that we have a lot to say about.
So we did this one kind of tonight to be like, here's what's been going on. But there are a couple things that we feel like maybe merit some more time than we have in this format, so we're going to give them some more time.
All right, that sounds good. And as usual, I have been Travis.
Rachel.
Stay tuned, stay active, and stay involved. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.